You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and welcome to another edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us, by the way. The last couple of weeks, I sort of went outside the boundaries of what normally one would call a typical interview on The Public Eye. Many of you know that I cover a lot of hot-button issues, things affecting people, especially here in this country, historical topics, biographies. But the last couple of weeks, I chose to speak with authors who wrote fiction, but the fiction, as we've been finding out, and we'll probably continue to do so this evening, revolves around many times personal experiences, what went on in the author's mind and their heart within their growing up. So many facets of their life play into the book. So sometimes people say, yeah, but that was a work of fiction. Well, yes, it was. But more importantly, it came from a person who believe that what they were writing was important not only to them, but they hopefully will reach out to many readers. And as it turns out, that's exactly the case. There's always some connection when a reader picks up a book, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. But this evening, my guest is Juliet Faithfull. Juliet's new novel is Liar's Dice. And Juliet is a native here of Massachusetts, or living here in Massachusetts, I should say. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking to her about Liar's Dice and what went into writing this particular book, any personal feelings, emotions, et cetera. So as they all say, sit back and relax. Juliet, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Al. Thank you for having me on.
I don't know that I did a complete justice with that particular introduction, but I'm gonna recall times in my own life, and I certainly never wrote a book, but just in sitting down with a blank piece of paper, even going way back to grammar school, and being assigned something or told, okay, write what you think, write a story. And many times I would sit there scratching my head and saying, what does the teacher want? What is he or she asking me for? And then the only thing I could rely on was something that took place, an experience that took place in my life, whether it was dealing with other people or, like as I said, a moment in time that meant something. So many emotions run through that. So let me start by asking you, in Liar's Dice, we've got a number of you have a number of characters within that, but how much of the book had to do with personal experiences in your life?
I would say that the central core of the book was inspired by my personal life, but nothing in the book happened to me. So it's all very much an invented reality that mirrors something. I have a disabled identical twin sister who was institutionalized when we were 10 years old. So my main character is a little older, 12 years old, but she wakes up one day and finds her disabled twin sister gone, sent to an institution. And so the novel is her quest to get her sister back. And definitely I drew on my own experiences as a twin and having had a family member suddenly be sent away. This was set in 1970s Brazil during the military dictatorship. So I wanted, my story was translated into these kind of fiction pieces, but it's really about the silence and the grief in my own family and also in my main character's family and how it was echoed and amplified, in Brazil, in a country that was a military dictatorship for two decades. And so all kinds of atrocities were happening and no one talked about it. And it sort of was the same as the reality that I grew up with, where no one talked about my sister. It was sort of not allowed. So I wanted to tell a story that kind of paralleled that emotional reality that I lived with growing up in Brazil, 1960s, 1970s Brazil.
I've got a, you know, and I, you know, you can answer this better than anyone. I've got to believe that by doing so, whatever inner emotions that you have, and you always hear people say that, especially today, there's more self-help information out there than ever before. And they say, you know, share your stories, share your ideas, you know, by talking about it, getting it off your chest will make it easier to cope with or to deal with. Is any of that true? Did it help you? Putting, you know, even though the fictional characters, but as you said, a lot of it, you know, it goes back, relates back to your own upbringing. Did it help you in any way?
I think it helped me hold on to her because I actually don't have a memory because I think it was so traumatic when she was sent away. My first 9 years of life, which were in a little village in rural Brazil, like my main character. I don't remember any of it, so I had to make it up. And in making it up, it was as if I could have her. And I don't know if that really, the twin I made up was like the twin I once had. I don't remember, but I like to think it was. But it certainly helped with, you know, I think a lot of people who lose their countries or emigrate, there was also a homesickness for Brazil, so writing a novel set in Brazil was also a way of being there. During the cold New England winters, I could be in Rio and, you know, write these characters that were people that I might have known or grown up with.
It's funny. I'm just, as you said that, I'm thinking, Rio in January. I mean, yeah, Rio in January. It can't be too tough. You don't need the mittens and the, you know, and the scarf. But here in New England, oh yeah, that's a reality. That brings me to the next point. You know, it's not as if you are still in your home base. In other words, where you were born. I mean, you know, came over from Brazil to a new country, you know, had to reacclimate yourself, new customs, a new way of life. How did that play into writing Liar's Dice?
You know, over time, it's changed. I wrote Liar's Dice over a very long period of time because it just came in bits and pieces over decades, really. And it was, I would write it on Thursday nights because I worked full time. And that would be the place where I would land and just write a little bit and write a little bit. And I was a single mom and I didn't have a lot of free time. But when my kids were finally in college, I took all those little pieces and kind of assembled them into the novel. But, you know, Over the time that I've written it, it's been scary how relevant the 1970s Brazil scenario is to America today. When I first started writing it, that wasn't so much the case. But my novel features, you know, a bookshop with a secret room for censored books and records. And there's a lot of political repression, and I think all these themes that were, when I started writing the book, were more about Brazil, they feel more relevant today in the world and here in the U.S. too.
Yeah, there's just so much, you know, globally, there's just so much going on. I think the advent of social media, you know, brings that into our living rooms 24/7, where, as you said, you and I growing up, whether it be Brazil, you know, or any continent, and especially here in this country, it was somewhat limited. You know, we didn't always get all the facts. Hopefully they were nothing but facts. I guess you can question that. I guess I'm still interested in getting a sense of if you were, you know, if you were born and raised right here in the U.S. and wrote this versus having to see life in two different societies. I mean, we're all humans and we all share this globe, but it's expansive. Anybody that's traveled knows that. And you go from one continent to another, you go from one country to another, you see the customs, you see the daily habits, the way people live in Europe versus here in the United States, versus Brazil. And then add in, as you said, the turmoil that was going on. I think that adds a little, I guess a little sugar, if you will, for lack of a better term, to the book. Would you agree that, you know, some people say, oh yeah, well, that's kind of the basic U.S. author just writing, you know, on what they remember from the 60s, 70s, 80s. But you took it from a whole different, you know, a whole different part of the world. So have you found, you know, I know the book is newly released, but have you gotten any feedback that people, you know, at least complimenting you on the fact that, you know, you came from a different time and place and then, you know, came over to this country to complete the book. Has that played out at all?
Absolutely. I mean, people talk about, first of all, I've had young Brazilian immigrants talk to me about how wonderful it is to read a character and a setting that they recognize. You know, in school, a friend of mine who's a teacher taught the first chapter to his classroom, and there were a couple, two or three Brazilian children in the classroom, because there are a lot of immigrants here in Massachusetts.
Right.
But also the experiences, not only of Brazil, but having a character with epilepsy and a disabled character on the page, I've had numerous people approach me and say, I've never read that I have epilepsy, you know, and it's so nice to see it on the page. And I think a setting like Rio, it's like traveling. People open a book and they can enter, and it's as if you've spent a week in 1970s Rio, you know, and also the interior of Brazil. And I think you get an immersive sense of place, and music. Music is in my book a lot. And of course, music is such a big part of Brazil. At the time when I wrote, 40% of the country or more were illiterate. And so Dolores and her mother, the main character, are illiterate in this book. But the language, the literacy that was had was in songs and the lyrics in songs. And it was also, the songs were a way to resist. And there were, even with censorship, there would be secret double meanings to the lyrics that everybody knew. And so I think in reading this book, you kind of discover the ways people survived the repression and kind of reclaimed sort of a certain sense of joy, which is part of Brazil too, even in that time.
Yeah. I got to say that, you know, WICN has been a longstanding, you know, one of the very few jazz stations left in here in this country. You know, we're well noted for, you know, that's our foundation. And when you talk about Brazil, I mean, what came to mind, just as you were just talking, I'm thinking of Antonio Carlos Jobim.
Of course.
Right? One of the true masters of Brazilian jazz, and what an influence he had on not only there, but across the, you know, across the globe. So yeah, I mean, that connection of, it's funny, you know, societies, and as I said, you can be at the far, far corners of the earth and you can find some commonality, and you certainly did that. I want to continue along those lines, but I do want to just take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. I'm Al Voner, and this is another edition of The Public Eye. My guest this week is Brazilian-American author of Liar's Dice, the new novel, Juliet Faithful. And in spite of the fact that this is a book of fiction, what Juliet has been talking about is how so much of her own life has been poured into the book. And then as readers pick up the book and read it, the feedback, especially people who are of Brazilian descent or people who came to this country, because we have so many people from different ethnicities, it was a connection. Again, Juliet, I think that is so important, no matter what it is, whether you're writing music, whether you're writing a book, whether you're creating art on a canvas. I think people really find or look for a connection, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And once they found some little, it may be as subtle as, a line or a passage in your book, and then all of a sudden it grabs them. It reminds them of something, their past, their youth. And then before you know it, they fall in love with the entire work. Does that sound a little far-fetched, or have you gotten the sense that, that's how people relate to your book?
I think people, even you have to fall in love with the first page, I think, to kind of turn the page. So there's something about you have to see yourself or be intrigued in some way by the characters, whether it's that you know someone who's disabled, or that you would like to travel to Brazil or Rio, or you wonder about it. The first paragraph of the novel, it begins where Dolores, the illiterate young girl, is looking out the window and sees Christ, which most people know that figure, looking down over Rio, and notices that he looks at some of the nice beaches of Leblon in Ipanema, and he can't see the favelas and the poorer parts of Rio because she notes that they're under his armpits, so he can't see them. So right from the beginning, the novel's going to be about inequality and class differences. And Dolores is a mix. She's Brazilian and also her father is English. So there's a sense of identity. She has to figure out her way. Her parents put her in a British school, and she doesn't fit in because she's never known English girls. So she's suddenly put in this stodgy school and she can't read and write. So there's also the cultural shock. And I think so many people are making their way, whether it's from an immigrant perspective or just starting a new school and not fitting in, that situation is where the novel begins. And feeling the grief, where we don't know exactly what happened to the twin in the beginning of the novel, but we know she's not there anymore. And there's an atmosphere where in Brazil, Dolores already hears of stories of disappearances and people are killed. And she knows that the newspapers don't tell the truth. So she starts to wonder if her sister might be dead and her parents are lying about it. And that's the lying in Liar's Dice is about bluffing and not telling the truth. Liar's Dice is a poker game. So there's a lot of bluffing, and there's a parallel between the family not talking about their grief and the country. The image people have of Rio in the 70s is Bossa Nova, the music, Pelé, the World Cup. It was of a country that was vibrant and joyful, but behind closed doors, there was terrible, torture, widespread torture, the censorship, and atrocities were happening and being covered up all the time. So there's this double story, and 12-year-olds are really good at sort of challenging norms and trying to figure out what is true and what is not. And that is the quest of the main character.
Yeah, and going back to what you had, what you were just saying, for me anyway, because I think it's easy. It's a very easy idea for people to, have a relation to, and that's the idea of not fitting in. I know, grammar school to middle school to high school, especially switching from living in the city to moving to a suburb at a very young age, trying to make adjustments. Oh, I got to make all new friends over again. Very hard to let go of the past, and almost a fear of what may be coming down the road for the future. And I think that was very, very clearly stated, in your book. I also want to, just read because I think it captures the book, and then I want to get your sense on this. One of the liner notes, this is a book that captures what it's like to come of age in a volatile time, a time when repression and silence are the fabric of everyday life. And I think, boy, that kind of fits all of us, doesn't it?
It really does. And also family secrets. I think everyone has some kind of family, some place where the family doesn't really want to talk about something, and how in a country, if you're living with that, both outside the in the world and also in the country, it can feel like talking is dangerous.
Oh yeah.
And writing is dangerous, and reading is dangerous.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, today, you know, with the advent of social media, just two opposing ideals when it comes to, you know, not just politics, you know, I don't know, the soccer match. I mean, you're in, you know, you have one team, and your best friend or a family member is rooting for another team, and before you know it, you're going head to head. But I guess at the end of the day, what lies dice, as you said, when you put it all together, the idea here is that there's a combination of you know, family challenges that families face, you know, facing up to the reality of changes taking place, but all of which happens in every one of our lives. I don't think there's anybody who can deny that, you know, some facet of their life, they've experienced many of the same things. We've just got a few moments left, so I wanted to ask you, you know, I know this is the, you know, the first book, but now that it's complete, now that it's out there, do ideas for you personally now for the next work, if there is one in the planning stages, does it come easier now once you cross that threshold?
You know, I have lots of ideas all the time. It's more which one will have that kind of enduring depth that you will come back to day after day and week after week, because a novel's like a marriage. So I have some floating around, one in particular, but I won't know until I do it whether it really will be the next book or not.
Of course.
Because I'm not a planner. I like to let it.
Just let it flow. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think most people, you know, especially people with a creative slant, that's how they feel. Just let it flow. Let the whole thing come forth, and then we'll see whether it's got relevance or not. But obviously, Liar's Dice, you were at that stage, you know, in the beginning stages of writing it. And, you know, that played out for you, you know. Well, the book is well received. I know many of the reviews have been very, very positive. You know, so kudos to you in that regard. Before we close out, again, Liar's Dice is a great read. You can always find some slight in that book. You will find a chapter or a passage that certainly can touch your heart in some way. Memories of the past, family members, friends, people that entered your life that may no longer be there. But with all of that said, Julia, if people want to reach out to you directly, get more information about you, is there a way of reaching you?
Absolutely. I have a website, julietfaithful.com, and you can sign up to be on my mailing list and reach me, write to me through there. You can buy the book through that website and all the usual places people buy books. But I'd be delighted to talk to anyone or stay in touch.
Great. And, you know, as I said at the outset, Juliet is a resident of Massachusetts right here. So, you know, one of our own, as they say, right here in our own backyard, which is great. I mean, you know, once again, you know, there's talent all over the world. But it's always, I personally love when I get the opportunity to speak or to meet with people, depending, it doesn't matter what the background, it's just, hey, you're from Massachusetts, so am I, blah, blah, blah. Before you know it, there's a connection right there, right? So you find some commonality in all of that. But again, the book is Liar's Dice. And my guest has been the author, Juliet Faithful. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. Certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.